Back, Ms. Jones, go ahead. All right, back on the record, 11 or November 15th, 2024, 2:15 p.m. on the Arborwood appeal. We're on redirect of Mrs. Bartley, so go ahead, Ms. Cuevas.
Thank you. If we could please pull up exhibit F12 and go to page 92. And this is the hearing examiner decision following the first CBER. And Ms. Bartlett, you were asked some questions about this prior decision, specifically findings 459 and 460 that are on page 92. And if we could scroll to page 93, please. And I just want to emphasize finding 463, which says, notwithstanding the above findings, the record does not support a finding that 50% buffer reduction will reduce groundwater hydrology to wetland P2 to a degree that adverse impacts to wetland P2 will be greater than that which would be associated with a standard buffer. And it goes on that Ms. Decker testified based on her education, licensing, and extensive experience as a geotechnical engineer that the multiple geotechnical investigations and reports establish multiple sources of hydrology to wetland P2, direct rainfall, runoff, and shallow interflow from adjacent areas during precipitation events, and shallow interflow from the recessional outwash from the north. And then also finding 464, mainly that the appellant's testimony did not establish that adverse impacts to wetland P2 will result from reducing the buffer to 100 feet. And then under for finding 465, it also states that, you know, the appellant's concerns regarding the design of the spine road and stormwater infrastructure do not constitute a basis to reverse or remand the CBER. Ms. Bartlett, do you recall those findings as well?
Yes.
Is it your understanding that the spine road did not need to be analyzed as part of the remand?
That's what it looks like.
If we could go to exhibit F13. And go to page 8. This is Examiner Marshall's order on motion for reconsideration and clarification. And conclusion 11 says whether or not the spine road could be built, but for a reduced buffer width, does not establish that a reduced buffer will reduce functions and values provided under the standard buffer. Or that buffer averaging, not merely the proposed construction of the spine road, will adversely impact the wetland. The relevant questions are not determined based on the location of the spine road, but whether a reduction from a 200-foot buffer to a 100-foot buffer will result in the reduction of the functions and values of the buffer, and whether buffer averaging will result in adverse impacts. Do you recall that finding as well, Ms. Bartlett?
Yes.
Based on the conclusion in paragraph 11 here, is it your understanding that the spine road after remand was required to have a 100-foot buffer?
Yes, that's what I understood.
Okay. And then under conclusion 12, the last sentence says the scope of review in this appeal is limited to whether the buffer reduction complies with the county's vested critical areas ordinance. And do you recall that conclusion as well?
Yes.
So was it your understanding that as part of your review on remand that you needed to reevaluate the location of the spine road for anything other than whether it meets the 100-foot minimum buffer width?
I only did it for the minimum buffer width, to comply with the quote that the code.
And was it also your understanding that where the spine road is located, that it will result in a reduction in the functions and values of the buffer, or that buffer averaging will result in adverse impacts?
The buffer averaging will not result in adverse impacts.
Thank you. If we could go to exhibit F18. And if we could go to page 5, this is your supplemental critical areas report. And in this report, you have the hearing examiner's conclusions of law 50 and 51. And then also 105 and 106. Why did you include these conclusions that are quoted in your supplemental critical areas report? Is it because that is your understanding of the scope of remand?
Yes, I included that just to give an overview of what the remand required of my additional information and reports.
If we could scroll down a little bit, please. So the last paragraph here says, accordingly, the supplemental report 1 demonstrates the modified CABR application complies with the proposed condition requiring buffer averaging to not result in buffer widths of less than 100 feet for wetland P2. And I'll just stop there. Do you recall what the proposed condition was, Ms. Bartlett?
That we have a minimum of 100 foot buffer from P2 to the road, plus the construction setback.
And does your supplemental critical errors report demonstrate that the application complies with that condition of 100 foot buffer for wetland P2?
Yes, it does.
And so the second point that is described in your report is that it analyzes installation of fill and buffers of wetlands, concluding that the proposed fill constitutes a temporary impact in the respective buffers, complies with former KCC 19200-220F, and calculations of buffer averaging continue to meet KCC 19200-220C1A1-5. Do you agree that your supplemental report demonstrates that as well?
I do.
And then finally, it says that your report also clarifies the scope of buffer impacts resulting from the north and south stream crossings and a utility corridor for sanitary sewer, demonstrating consistency with the vested critical area regulations. Do you think that your report demonstrates that as well?
It does.
Were you asked to evaluate fill outside of wetland buffers?
I was not.
Was it your understanding that the hearing examiner asked Taylor Morrison to review fill outside of wetland buffers?
I don't recall that.
Mr. Telegin asked you some questions about the location of the spine road and whether it could be moved further away from wetland P2. Are you an engineer?
I am not an engineer.
Do you rely on the engineering plans that were prepared by CORE?
I do.
Do you trust their conclusions or the location that they decide that needs to be? I'll repeat the question. There's just a little bit of feedback.
Yeah.
Do you trust their conclusions regarding the appropriate location of the spine road?
I do.
And so your supplemental critical errors report was prepared specifically to address remand issues. Do you know if the county submitted or prepared a CABR decision that is solely limited to what is included in your supplemental critical areas report? Or was it also incorporating other mitigation plans and other buffer reduction plans that you had previously prepared?
The original had everything. I believe the second one did have it.
If we could go to exhibit F1, which is the, and then page 30, and this is the staff report or the notice of decision, I believe, for the revised CABR. We could scroll down a little bit, please. So paragraph 8 says documents consulted in the analysis. And the did you hear Mr. Heacock's testimony?
Yes, I did.
And he described that the italics and the underline and the bold were what the county added to show changes from the original caver. Do you remember that portion of his testimony?
Yes, I do.
If we could scroll down so we could see the full table. And so there are 11 exhibits that are listed here. And exhibits 2 through 6 are prior reports that you have prepared, right?
I believe so, yes.
Or 2 through 3
Yes.
and then 6, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And then there's also exhibit 11, which is your supplemental critical areas report as well.
Correct.
If we could go to page 54, please. We could scroll down a little bit. And so, keeping in mind that the italics and bolds and underlines are new or changes that were made after remand, it doesn't look like there were changes that were made to the wetland buffer restoration plan, at least with what we're looking at on page 54. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
We could scroll to the next page. And you talked a little bit about, goals and objectives and performance standards that are often included in mitigation reports. Are these goals, objectives, and performance standards that are included in the revised CABR, from your understanding, is that still applicable to all of the CABR mitigation or any sort of mitigation that would be imposed?
Yes, it is.
So that would include, objective 1 to control invasive species and objective 2 to increase native plant cover within the shoreline buffer. Is that right?
Yes.
And then you also have some specifications for planting as well as plant materials. We could scroll to the next page, please. And then you also have additional planting specifications that do not appear to be revised. And you have plant lists as well. And if we could keep scrolling. And you also have a paragraph that describes maintenance for the buffer restoration. It says maintenance of planting areas will occur for 5 years and will re involve removing invasive plant species, irrigating plant species, and reinstalling failed plantings as necessary. And it also lists some other maintenance activities that would be included. Can you describe what those are, please?
The maintenance plan re or the mitigation plan requires that you keep the cover of invasive species low so that they don't overtake the installed plants and fail the performance standards. So one of those is to remove and control invasive and non-native plants that happen to come into the wetland buffer or the wetland buffers. And then installation of a temporary irrigation system is required as well to make sure that the plants receive water on a regular basis to encourage their survival and growth. And then the final one is replace dead or failed plants that do not survive for other reasons.
Thank you. Do you have any changes that you would make to the maintenance plan that you set out following the preparation of your supplemental critical areas report?
I would not.
If we could scroll to the next header where it says monitoring plan, and it says that the buffer restoration areas will be monitored annually for a 5-year period following plant installation. Can you summarize what else is included in the monitoring plan in the revised CABR?
The monitoring plan has specifications for how to collect the data in the monitoring units, which are 30 to 40 foot in diameter. And they they're established randomly within the restored buffer areas, and then it documents how to record the data, take photos, and what to include in the monitoring report.
It looks like there's also some specific provisions for the monitoring plan related to vegetation, and that includes documenting the developing native vegetation buffer within the mitigation area, and some information will be collected during each monitoring visit. Can you describe what that would include?
That would include going to the site in the late summer, early fall, and take a look at the vegetation within the monitoring units and record the number and frequency of the trees, shrubs, and ferns to determine the survival rate. So that would be counting the live individuals, and then kind of following that, you estimate the percent cover that it has. You know, I track it every year, so you like to see an increasing percent survival or percent cover over a period of 5 years. So that's recorded, and as well as the cover by invasive and non-native species, just to say, well, it has a little bit, but it's meeting the standard. We do try to keep, we treat to remove all of it, but you can't do it in between monitoring. Stuff will come in, and then take photos of everything from established photo stations and of the monitoring units so that you can document the changes that occur over the five-year monitoring period.
And then also there's a monitoring reports section, and it says that, you know, annual monitoring reports will contain at least the following. Can you describe what a typical monitoring report would look like and what it would include?
The monitoring report would present the original mitigation plan as it was written. Then it would be followed up with an as-built, because that's what we do after everything is installed. We do an as-built and baseline report to kind of use, that we use to compare the monitoring results over the five-year period. We include a map showing where the photo stations and monitoring units are so that the reviewer can orient themselves, and we present the goals and objectives and performance standards, and then we provide a list. We provide a list of species in each monitoring unit and record the percent survival rate, or however many are still alive, and the percent cover, as well as their height, so we can have an indication of how well they're doing. And then we include the photos and a summary of any contingency measures we might need if plants have died off.
Thank you. And then there's also a contingency plan header where it says, if the performance standards are not being met during the five-year monitoring period, contingency measures will be implemented to achieve the standard by the next monitoring season. And can you describe what else is included in the contingency plan?
Well, we provide a description of what has happened and what we plan, what our plan is for replacing the plant. Sometimes a certain species doesn't do as well as others, and they've all died off. So we'll look for a more successful plant and propose to put those in place of the ones that didn't work out. We also check, you know, I've been sprinkled a couple times at mitigation sites. So some of them, you know, they mostly have above ground irrigation that we can see working in most cases. And if it's not getting enough water, then we talk to the owner and get that updated. And then if anything else happens, then we try to find a corrective measure by talking with the owner and occasionally with the county to make sure that we are all on the same page.
Thank you. And if we could just scroll down just a tad. So the underlined italics and bold section mentions that upon review of the revised submittal materials and extensive review of the associated documents submitted, the mitigation analysis meets the code requirements. And in your experience as a wetland scientist who does a majority of your work in Kitsap County, Do you also agree that this mitigation plan is meets the requirements of the Kitsap County Code?
I do.
And like to switch gears for a second and ask, what are the three factors to determine whether a wetland is present?
We the vegetation, soil, hydric soils, and wetland hydrology.
And you typically need all three to find a to determine whether or not a wetland is present, right?
Correct.
So if there is not hydrology, then there wouldn't be a wetland. Is that fair?
If it doesn't meet the other two criteria, then it would not be a wetland.
Does a wetland buffer have hydrology?
Not usually that we can see or visualize in the soil.
Why not?
Because it's an upland and it has soils where water can percolate through pretty regularly, and the water is usually confined to whatever depression or slope trough or whatever that the wetland is confined to.
Would it also be fair to say that it's because hydrology is one of the factors for determining whether there is a wetland present, as
Yes, that's
opposed to determining whether or not there is a buffer present?
correct. Yes.
Are all wetland buffers the same?
They are not.
Is it true that some wetland buffers have a greater influence on hydrology than others?
Yes.
So would a buffer that's in proximity to a depressional wetland have a greater influence on hydrology than those that would be associated with a slope or a riverine wetland?
Yes.
And so you mentioned about 75% of your work is done in Kitsap County, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Can you remind us how many mitigation plans you prepared in the county?
I don't remember my answer, 80 to 100, something like that.
So in practice, has the county ever asked you to provide an assessment of hydrology within the buffers as part of mitigation reports?
No, they have not.
If we could go to Exhibit F4, which is the Kitsap County Code, and go to section 19200-250, and thank you. And so Mr. Telegen asked you some questions about this section, and under subsection B, it says plan, sorry, under this section, a plan is required for regulated activities within wetland buffers under subsection B. And then it lists some specific requirements that incorporate 715. And if we could go to the current version of the Kitsap County Code, please. So this section has now been recodified as 19200-230 and lists wetland mitigation requirements. So subsection A still references mitigation sequencing, as you testified before. And then, but subsection B has now been changed. And it no longer specifically addresses mitigation for regulated activities in wetland buffers. Is that your understanding, Ms. Bartlett?
Yes.
So under subsection B, it says where mitigation is required under sequencing, under A, a mitigation report shall be provided in accordance with 19700-715. And so is it fair to say that the prior version of the code didn't necessarily distinguish between wetland mitigation and wetland buffer mitigation?
That's correct, yes.
And then it's clarified now in the current version of the code.
Yes.
We could go back to the vested version of the code, so exhibit F4. And if we could go to section 19700715. And this is on page 72 of exhibit F4. And under section F1, which I believe is 2 pages down, and you were asked some questions about what needs to be included in a mitigation plan, and specifically a preliminary site plan, and that includes subpart one, and then an explanation of how adequate hydrology will be provided. And you testified that based on your years of experience and practice in the county, that this has only required hydrology for wetlands. Is that correct?
For wetland mitigation, yes.
So regardless of whether you interpret mitigation to include rectifying, do you believe that the Supplemental Critical Areas Report is consistent with the code requirements?
I do.
And Mr. Telligent also asked you some questions about section 19200-225D, and specifically asked you about subsection 4, which is mitigation shall be performed in accordance with specific project mitigation plan requirements.
Yes.
And if we could switch to exhibit F18, which is the Supplemental Critical Areas Report, and go to page 8. And then, if we could scroll down a little bit. Yeah, thank you. So, Mr. Telligent asked you about the mitigation that you proposed, and he suggested that it was complying with buffer averaging rules. Is the mitigation that you proposed supposed to comply with the rules, or is it supposed to comply with additional buffer in different buffer areas surrounding the wetland? Meaning in excess of a 200-foot buffer, for example.
Yes.
And the buffer averaging rules under 19200-220C1A, those have certain limitations for using buffer averaging, right?
Yes.
So for example, you have to show that a buffer would not be reduced by more than 50% in width, right?
That's correct, yes.
So, if a road could not be placed in a location that preserved a buffer width of at least 50%, that doesn't mean that you couldn't rely on 19200-225D for justification, right? And if we could go back to the vested version of the code, exhibit F4, and go to page 37. And if we could go to sections C1, which is, excuse me, C1A, which is the next paragraph there. So Mr. Telligen asked you some questions about this code provision in connection with your work. And can you read Section A for us, please, where it starts with buffer averaging.
Buffer averaging. Standard buffer widths may be modified by the department for a development proposal by averaging buffer widths. The total area contained within the buffer after averaging shall be no less than that contained within the standard buffer prior to averaging. The buffer shall not be reduced by more than 50% of the standard buffer width at any point. The department may allow wetland buffer averaging where it can be demonstrated that such averaging can clearly provide as great or greater functions and values as would be provided under the standard buffer requirement. The following standards shall apply to buffer averaging.
Thank you. And I want to focus on the part where it says that the department may allow wetland buffer averaging, where it can be demonstrated that such averaging can clearly provide as great or greater functions and values as under the standard buffer requirement. Does this section say that that is required to be included as part of a mitigation report?
No, it doesn't.
Is it more so that this indicates that the county must reach that conclusion?
Yes, it does.
And do you talk to other consultants that are participating in this project?
Yes.
Does that include Ms. Decker?
Yes.
And then does that include Mr. Koger as well?
Yes.
So going back to the beginning of my questions, you were asked about the hearing examiner's findings based on evidence that was in the record at that time. Has the consulting team been conducting ongoing hydrology assessments of the site?
They have.
In your experience, is it better to rely on actual data regarding hydrology as opposed to findings that are a part of a legal proceeding?
Yes.
And I have no further questions.
Okay. Ms. Bartlett, I guess thank God it's Friday after sitting through
Hi,
all this. I
Mr.
hope. Oh,
Examiner.
okay. Some recross again. All right. Mr. Telgen, go ahead.
Thank you. Let's see here. So, Ms. Bartlett, Mr. Getches asked you about the roads in the Hillbend neighborhood.
Yes.
Do you recall that? And he said, well, I mean, if roads had an impact on wetlands, we would expect, to see wetland P2 not doing so hot, right?
Yes.
And you said, that's right. I mean, you agreed with him, is my general understanding.
Correct.
What kind of impacts would you see on wetland P2 if roads in the area were having an impact?
I think we'd see it not being a wetland anymore, and not contain wetland vegetation or hydrology.
What an indication potentially be like less water reaching the wetland?
Yes.
So I'm going to go to Exhibit A9. This is the original Radke assessment of the wetland. Oh, wait, sorry. Can you see that?
Yes.
So when Radke first went and looked at the wetland, it consistently identified the wetland as having a stream running through it.
That's what it looks like, yes.
If you look over here to the legend, it says existing streams.
Yes.
And then in every one of their diagrams, they show a stream going through the wetland. And you were out there and you didn't see a stream, right?
I did not.
Isn't that potentially an indication that, hey, maybe the roads and the upland development have already had an impact if there used to be a stream running through it and now there's not?
Potentially.
Okay. So it's not quite as simple as just saying, hey, these roads uphill. We don't see it right now. I mean, you didn't go back and monitor wetland P2 before the Hillbend neighborhood was built.
Well, no.
Yeah, so you can't really answer Mr. Getches's question or respond to his speculations.
Well, and his question was about whether or not those arrows should be pointing that direction.
No,
So
but
I don't think.
he did ask you if those roads were having an impact. Wouldn't we see an effect of that on wetland P2? And you agreed with him that that was not the case. And so I'm just saying there is some evidence. For example, Radke saw a stream, you didn't. Right. Actually, I'll go back. Let's see here. If I look at these highlights, don't matter really anymore, but Miss Keyes was sort of comparing and contrasting the old version of the code to which this project is vested in the new version, right? And she noted too that subsection B of section 19200250 says mitigation for regulated activities in wetland buffers,
Yes.
right? And that indicates that impacts in wetland buffers need to be mitigated. Right, but that's not in the new code. At least
I
that's how I
don't know.
understood.
I don't think that was the understanding that I had that it
Well,
was.
so explain to me, because that so first she started off pointing you to subsection B, right? And then she contrasted that with just a second. I'm gonna switch to my web browser. I could find it. Microsoft Outlook, Outlook. Oh, there it is, Google Chrome. This is the same section. I thought she was pointing you to this subsection B down here.
Yes.
And there was a change between those two, which indicated that, you know, before the code was looking at impacts potentially to the buffers, but is now it's looking just at impacts to the wetland.
Yes, at least yes.
And is was that your understanding of that exchange? I'm just trying to confirm because that was my understanding of the exchange.
I believe that was the understanding that the buffer mitigation wasn't included in this particular section currently.
Right. And so walk me through that, because if I look at the intro to the new section, right, it says all impacts to wetlands or buffers shall be mitigated according to this title. So it actually expressly says right in the introduction, all impacts to wetlands or buffers shall be mitigated, right? And then mitigation report says where mitigation is required, then you have to comply with the mitigation plan requirement, right?
Correct.
So to the extent that the existing code has clarified the meaning of the older code, it has clarified it by saying you have to mitigate impacts to buffers, not just wetlands, right? Which is sort of the exact opposite of what Ms. Keehy's got you to say.
Well, and I don't think that that was the point of the question, but I'd have to see more of the code. I don't have it memorized, so.
Sure, I'm just reading this section, which was called to your attention.
Right.
Right. And then as one final thing, Miss Creehy said, well, you weren't the only well, first you talked about the prior wetland reports you drafted. How many of those looked at hydrological impacts and attempted to address hydrological impacts on wetland P2?
I can you read and ask the question? I'm not sure what you're getting at.
Yeah, so that you spent some time looking at prior reports that you had written in this for this project, and Ms. Quihis was sort of pointing you know, through the monitoring and like the plantings and stuff like that, and she was emphasizing how many reports you've done, and it wasn't just your most recent report that was relied upon, but it was also the older reports too that were relied upon, right? I'm just wondering how many of those reports looked at hydrological impacts on P2.
None of them did.
None of them. So I granted the universe of reports that might be germane to this issue may don't just include your supplemental report. It includes all your past reports too, but none of them looked at hydrological impacts.
Not that I recall.
Right. And then she said, well, you know, you're not the only, you know, the county has to rely not just on you, but on the other consultants. And Ms. Keehy specifically mentioned Mrs. Decker or Ms. Decker and Mr. Koger.
Yes.
Yes. Are you aware of any information that Mr. Koger supplied to anybody, either at the county or to Taylor Morrison prior to, say, two and a half weeks ago?
I'm aware of preliminary information,
Do you
nothing
know if it
major.
was sent to the county specifically as part of the review of the CABR?
I do not know.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions.
Ms. Keyes, any redirect again?
Yeah, just a few. Ms. Bartlett, when do you analyze hydrology for wetlands?
When we are proposing to directly impact a wetland and propose mitigation for that?
Are you directly, or is the project directly impacting wetland P2?
It is not directly impacting wetland P2.
And that's all I have. Thank you.
Yeah, now we are done, Ms. Bartlett. So thank you for your
Wait.
testimony. And I thought, was there, did I hear somebody else?
I thought about maybe one follow-up question regarding the
Okay.
screen.
All right. Go ahead, Mr.
It shouldn't take too long. If I can't share my screen, then we'll skip it, but we'll see. We'll see if it works. Hey, Ms. Bartlett, can you see this?
I can, yes.
Yeah, this is, let's see, F17, page one, and you see wetland P2 here.
Barely, yeah. There it is.
Can you see it now? Again, you
Yes.
see this line on the western border going over to L2?
I do.
And what is that? Do you know what that symbolizes?
That is the culvert that leaves P2 and directs water to wetland L2.
Okay, so there is still water going from P2 over to L2, and they put a culvert there for some reason, right? Because of the water that goes from P2 to L2.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Doesn't go uphill, right?
No, it
But
doesn't.
it does go downhill. I remember you testifying about that a bit in the first hearing.
Yes.
And what is it, wasn't there at one time a logging road there?
Yes. So it looks like, yeah.
Yeah, and so they would have had to do something so there wasn't a stream if they had a road. Well, I don't want you to speculate too much, so that was one question, and then as far as having to mitigate for buffers, where did it go? A buffer takes. I mean, this buffer take here is mitigated over here, isn't it? It's not like you're not mitigating for buffer takes through buffer averaging, right?
Correct.
But wasn't that the idea? You do this buffer take. This is your new reduced buffer of 100 feet, and you do your give over in these other areas.
Right. And it's in the buffer of wetland P2.
Okay, so yeah, I just wanted to. It sounded like, I don't know. I started to get the feeling like the questions were designed to show that you hadn't done mitigation for buffer takes, but you had,
Yes.
right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's all.
Okay, Ms. Keyes?
Nothing else. Thank you.
Nothing. Okay. I think that's it. Yeah. Okay, good. All right, Ms. Bartlett, thank you for
Thank
sitting
you.
in the hot seat for so long. And like I
No
was
problem.
saying, yeah, we're going to finally get together your weekend. So thanks again. All right. So I think, Ms. Keyes, that's it for the applicant side, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right, Mr. Telgen, I guess we're ready to move on to you. And I think you had sent us some emails about who you're going to be bringing up. But could you remind me again how many witnesses you're going to bring for your role?
I'm going to be starting with Dr. Sarah Cook.
Okay. All right, let's bring her up.
All right.
Are we going to take an afternoon break? We took a that very short one where Ms. Keyes
We
was
can,
sort of
I guess
trying to
we can
get.
take one now. We've only gone for 45 minutes, but yeah, we can if you need. Yeah, we can till 3:15.
Sure, that sounds great.
Okay.
Thanks.